this week's Parsha, Parshas Vayechi, we have to come to terms with a frightening reality about who we are and how we become the people that we are. In this week's Parsha, we have Yaakov giving the brachas to the Shvatim. Then he's going to give each Shevet a bracha based on his personal characteristics and qualities so that they should know what they're capable of and where they should invest their koichas. I often think that it would be nice if we were able to have someone direct us and guide us and tell us, this is what you're supposed to be doing. This is where you're supposed to put your energy. But we're not zeicha to that, but the Shvatim were. And so Yaakov is speaking to each one of them. For example, he tells Yisachar, he says, you're going to be a chamar garim. You're going to be a donkey that can carry a heavy load. And you can continue to carry that heavy load even when things are hard. The Baal Torah says that donkeys do not carry loads for themselves. They carry them for others. And like that donkey, Yisachar, who are the Bnei Torah, who are the ones who are learning Torah, most of the Chachmei Sanhedrin come from the Shevet of Yisachar. These are the ones who carry the burden, the Ol HaTorah, for the whole of Klal Yisrael and help Klal Yisrael by directing and guiding and teaching them and acting as the Chachmei Sanhedrin. What's interesting, though, if you look through the Parsha of the Brachos, is that not all of the Shvatim get Brachos. Some of the Shvatim do not get told their tafkid. On the contrary, they're told things that they did wrong and what their problematic qualities are. It says about Reuven that he was a pachas kamayim. He acted quickly without thinking properly. He was impetuous, like water flows quickly. It's referring to a story, a very obscure story, meaning one we don't really understand the details of, but it says that Reuven got involved in his father's bed. It says it in very stark terms in the Chumash, but the Mefarshim tell us that Reuven did not sleep with Bilhah. He just moved his father's bed from Bilhah's tent to his mother Leah's tent. And for doing something like that, impetuously, without thinking about it, he loses the kuhuna, he loses the bechira. He does this action with the intention of doing something good, and yet there's something in his action which is too hasty, it's too impulsive, and therefore forever he loses the right to be the Bechor. He doesn't get the Kahuna, he doesn't get the double Nachla, like that transfers over to Yosef, who has Ephraim and Menasha, and the Kahuna passes on to Levi. He could have had it, and he didn't. We have a similar thing with Shimon and Levi. We're told, Arur apam ki az, your anger is strong, and therefore, achalkem bi Yaakov, afitem bi Yisrael. I'm going to divide you up. Shevet Levi is not going to get a portion in Eretz Yisrael. Instead, they will be spread out, and they will become the lamdim, and move from place to place, and teach, and to be a melamed. A person needs a tremendous amount of patience, and he's also going to have to be the recipient of other people's kindness, which is going to teach them to be patient with people. And this is going to be the tikkun of the midah of ka'as, of anger, which Shimon and Levi demonstrated. What's interesting, though, is that the story of Shechem must have happened about 300 years before they actually got to Eretz Yisrael. So the Tikkun is only going to start 300 years later. So we are certainly not dealing with Shimon and Levi. We're dealing with great-great-great-grandchildren. We're dealing with many generations later. So what is the point of this Tikkun, of the Ka'as that they displayed back then in Shechem, which their descendants for all eternity are going to have to correct? Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says that there are two types of midos. There are the midos we attain from our environment. We become the kind of people that we are sometimes based on the place that we live. For example, I'm speaking to you from Canada. Canadians are notorious for being polite almost to a fault, which means that somebody who grows up, even a frum person who grows up in Canada, is likely going to be more polite and more patient than somebody who's growing up in a different environment where the nature of the people is to be more quick and to move and to be more assertive. It's personality traits that we pick up from the place that we live in. But these are the kinds of midos that are easy to attain and also easy to divest ourselves of. These do not remain with us. We don't pass it on generationally. If our grandparents or great-grandparents moved to wherever they moved to after the war, after the Churban of Europe, they did not bring Hungary or Poland, although in their generation, perhaps, they held on to the qualities and the characteristics of the land that they came from. Their children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren picked up the new culture of the land that they lived in. These are not intrinsic mitos. These are mitos that come to us because of our environment. However, there are other mitos which we have inherited from our ancestors, which are there and will be there for all eternity. When it says that Jews are Rachmanim Bashanim Goyim Lechasadim, which we inherited from our Avais, that means intrinsically, wherever we live, wherever we come from, a Yid is a Yid, and we can test it out by seeing if they have these basic mitos of Rachmanus Bashanus, and if we are Goyim Lechasadim. For the positive and for the negative. That means we have to be aware of the mitos so that we can learn to use the positive ones well and also to control the negative ones. And we see this throughout the Torah. It says that an Ammoni Amayavi may never, ever, ever marry into the Jewish nation because the Ammonim Amayavim have something intrinsically wrong with their Hakaras HaTov, and no matter what, and no matter when, and no matter where, they'll never be able to get rid of that, the men of Ammon Amayav. Mitzrayim, we are told, did something terrible to us, and therefore we have to give them 3 generations to cleanse themselves, but after 3 generations, we are able to marry a Mitzri. So we wouldn't be able to know this on our own, but the Torah tells us the Midah of Ammon Amayav is a Midah that will never be diluted, divested. We cannot marry an Ammoni Amayav. Mitzri we can marry. It's for this reason that Avram didn't allow his son to marry a Kanani, not even the child of Eliezer, who is his trusted servant, who had picked up so much in his house, even though in Haran, where he did send his child, they were serving Avodah Zarah. Deos can change. Bad philosophies can change. Mitos cannot. Mitos are passed down. Deos are not passed down. And so Avraham told his servant Eliezer, I'm sorry, you are my dear servant, you are my dear Talmud, you are someone who I trust with everything, but I cannot allow my son, who's going to be the founder of Klal Yisrael, to marry yours into your family because there is a mita there which would make it impossible. Going back to Reuven, we see interestingly that the mita of Reuven didn't come up with the story of Bilhah, but we can track it throughout history. The first time we see Reuven is with the story of the Dudaim. Reuven goes to the field, and he finds Dudaim there, and he picks them. And it says it was in the time of Ktzir HaChitim. He wouldn't go, it's the time where we harvest the wheat. He wouldn't go into somebody else's field until it was after harvest time, and even then he only took wildflowers and not wheat. And we see this as a good midah, this good midah, that he wouldn't steal from other people, that they asked for Nachla across the Yarden because they said we have much cattle who are going to eat much grass and we don't want to chas v'shalom ever get into a situation where our cattle is stealing from somebody else and therefore give us Nachla me'iver ha'yarden. And this is seen as something positive for the Shevet of Reuven, which they learned from their, or not learned from, which they inherited that gene of we don't want to steal. But the Mefarshim point out that there was something negative in his getting the wildflowers. Now, wildflowers don't necessarily belong to anyone, but the Mefarshim say that there's a small little complaint against him. Rashi says on the Medrash that Reuven could have taken just a little bit more time and found bundles of wheat that have been left behind as hefker, clearly hefker, meaning not wildflowers which are assumed to be hefker, but wheat bundles that were left behind as hefker, and then he could have taken them, but he didn't want to invest the time, whatever it means, to look around for the wheat bundles, and therefore he found the dudam, and he picked them up, and he took them. And this, again, is his midah of pachas, the midah of impulsivity, of impetuousness, of doing things quickly. He picked up the dudam and left. And his descendants, 300 years later, with the very best of intentions, also made a mistake. They jumped ahead and they said, give us the land of the Yarden. And again, they had good intentions. Like Reuven had good intentions with the Dudam. We are not talking about the intentions, and they are praised for their actions. But there is a thread here of this midah of pachas, of doing things quickly. They lost out because however good their land is, Eretz Yisrael is better. However good the Dudam is, wheat would have been better. And you showed your pachas, you showed your quickness, and you... And again, for good reasons, but there was something missing in the thought process, and therefore you ended up in Eivor HaYarden when you could have ended up in Eretz Yisrael. The implications for us are frightening, as I said. It says in Reishis Chachma, Shaar HaYira, which is a Masechta, meaning it's a sefer that talks to us about Gehenim and Gan Eden. It's a scary sefer. And it says that a person who is in Gehenim, on Shabbos, they take him out of the furnace and they put him into mountains of snow. Again, whatever it means, it's all symbolic. But after Shabbos, he is chased back to his place in Gehenim in the heat. And it says that on his way back, he takes from the mountains of snow and he puts the snow under his armpit so that he has some coolness to take back with him to the fiery furnace of Gehenim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, even here in Gehenim you're stealing, meaning a thief remains a thief remains a thief. Meaning, if you come to Gehenim with your midah of taking things that don't belong to you, then even in Gehenim, you're still going to be stealing. Because a person's midos don't change. His deos change. But midos do not change. There's a famous story of Rav Chaim Friedlander towards the end of his life. He had just come back from a medical trip, where presumably he was told that his illness was terminal. And he came into the Rosh Yeshivas of Ponovich and he asked them, what should I do if I only have a few weeks left to live? What should I do during this time? What limud should I be doing? What tzchuya should I be taking on myself? And it is said that the Rosh Yeshivas responded to him and said, work on your midos, because whatever midos you leave this world with, those are the midos that remain with you for all eternity. And they're the midos that are passed on to your children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. So yes, after 300 years, Levi still has to be split up because the midah of Kaas was still there because it's going to be passed down. And therefore, this is something that they have to control. And the way to control Kaas is by working on patience, because Kaas always comes when we are impatient. That's, if we think about it, that's when we get angry, is when we are impatient. And it's a midah that's going to be passed down from generation to generation to generation for the negative and for the positive. And therefore, midos are important to work on. Anyone of us who is a parent recognizes that sinking feeling that we feel when we recognize one of our midos turning up in our children. And we know exactly where it came from. And lehefech, when we have invested the effort into working on a positive midah and we see that our children are learning that positive midah from us, and again, it's nature and nurture, right? The nurture part is that they see us exhibiting it, but then what we are learning here from this parsha is that the nature part is real, and we pass on midos in our genetic makeup, and therefore it is certainly worthwhile to be working on our midos.